The age range that we look at is typically young people born between 1995 and 2010, and this generation is vastly, vastly different.
Different how? Certainly, they have desires.
Wanting a job that pays well, but not necessarily, you know, sacrificing their entire happiness for it.
What questions do they ask?
Can we be diverse and accepting of people? Can we protect the planet? And then can we allow a safe society for people and safe schools for kids to attend?
Welcome to the Learning Vibes podcast. I'm Dr. Annie Ranking, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Knowlton. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling old, Annie. As a member of Generation X, I'm feeling old, particularly given this month's topic.
Yeah, this month and next month, we'll be exploring Generation Z, and I am right in between your generation and Generation Z. I am technically a millennial, but over the next two sessions, we're going to be learning about Gen Z and all about them. Dave, your daughters are both Gen Z, right?
They are, Annie, and it's been a really interesting experience to have them raise me. They both are just a lot more open than my generation is on average, I think. Open to diversity and open to experiencing people the way they bring themselves to the table. And it's been really interesting to look at those differences between their generation and mine. And Annie, don't you have family members who are members of Generation Z too?
Yes, my niece and nephew and my son. And when I did a little bit of research, I found out that they are part of Generation Z. And the information they teach me and the way they learn is so different than how I learned, right? They have the internet at their fingertips. And if they can't figure something out, they just go to the internet and figure it out. And then they've learned something new. So it's just really, really great to watch them learn through this whole process of raising Gen Z.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned learning, Annie, because we are going to be talking today to Dr. Corey C. Miller and Dr. Megan Grace, and you will hear from them both in today's episode and next month's episode. And next month, there will be quite a lot on teaching Generation Z and helping them learn. So I'm glad you mentioned learning in talking about Generation Z. But anyway, in this episode, Dr. C. Miller and Dr. Grace provide us with some great insights for thinking about Generation Z. Then next month, not only will you hear Dr. C. Miller and Dr. Grace talk about helping Generation Z learn, but also you're going to hear directly from some members of Generation Z.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear this conversation and for our listeners to hear the conversation with the members of Gen Z next month. So everyone, please go check out our website. It's learningvibespodcast.weebly.com. You can also read our blog posts. You can find some older blog posts, an episode of our podcast, and there is a blog post all about the uniqueness of Generation Z.
Very cool. You also can follow us on Twitter at @vibes_learning and like us on Facebook at Learning Vibes Podcast. And as always, you can write us at learningvibespodcast@gmail.com.
So now in this rest of this episode, you'll hear Dave's conversation with Dr. Corey C. Miller and Dr. Megan Grace. You can learn more about them by visiting thegenzhub.com.
So, Corey C. Miller, welcome to the Learning Vibes podcast. I'm so glad you're here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I love any opportunity I can to talk about Generation Z.
Fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are in the world and what you do and so forth?
Well, I'm still trying to explain that to my mom, but I will do my best to do it with you all today. So I am a faculty member at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, and I teach in a department called Leadership Studies in Education and Organizations. So I teach about half the time I teach leadership classes, and the other half the time I teach preparation classes for people going into student affairs and higher education. So that's where I get to marry the two, you know, areas of interest, where I look at, you know, young people today, college age students, and how they navigate the world and engage in leadership and civic engagement and all the great things that we're studying with Generation Z.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad you're here. And Megan Grace, welcome to the Learning Vibes podcast.
Hi there. Thank you for having us. My name's Megan Grace. I'm a consultant with a company called Plata LLC, and we are an organizational development firm. We do a lot of work with higher education, nonprofits, government, and really, like, we have a simple mission of just being better. And it's really helpful because we do so much work with our higher ed and college age population that understanding Generation Z is really critical to my job and being able to help higher education professionals design better experiences for students. And my other hats is that I am Corey's research partner. We've been kind of on this journey of Generation Z for what's almost 9 years now, which is pretty wild to think about. It means I'm getting further in age from Generation Z, which is kind of weird, but I am also a researcher, author, podcast host, anything that allows us to talk about Generation Z, we try to fill into that space.
Do I understand you two have a fairly recent book or more than one on Generation Z?
Yeah, we do. We have four books. Our most widely read is one called Generation Z Goes to College. That one was the first one that came out, but we have another a scholarly one that came out just recently, about two and a half years ago. And that was Generation Z, A Century in the Making. And that one is really neat. That was a fun one to write because that chronicles the past 100 years and how generations don't just drop out of the sky. People don't just, like, you know, just born doing something. You're created by the culture and the context within which you live. And so we were able to track back to previous generations to see how they might have shaped the world in which Gen Z is growing up in. So that's why we called it Generation Z, A Century in the Making. But I think probably the biggest thing that we have, and it's coming up, it's not quite here yet, is we're constantly asked about what is kind of this global profile of Gen Z? Who are they? Are they the same in the US as they are in Korea, as they are in, you know, Finland? And the answer is, well, we don't know. In some ways, yes, because we're in a globalized society. And in some ways, no, because there's some cultural specific things. But Megan and I decided to embark on redoing or sort of relaunching some of the best of some of our previous studies that we've done in the fall, with a US population. And then we got kind of a wild idea of, hey, why don't we see if anybody else wants to do this around the world? And it ended up being that we're now, I just counted it today, we've got research teams assembled in 20 countries. We've got another 15 more slated to come on in the next 2 weeks. This might possibly be the largest coordinated Generation Z study in the world that we're going to be heading up. And so that big question about who is Gen Z, I think we're going to have an even better answer, especially kind of as we kind of come out of COVID as well. That's going to be a really different kind of a demographic. And we'll have that answer coming up very, very shortly. So for any listeners who are interested, you definitely follow us on social media and check us out on our website.
And what is the website where people can check that out and learn more?
It's thegenzhub.com.
Very good. Outstanding. Well, even in just hearing your introductions and some of the research you're doing, I already have 30,000 questions I want to ask. But let's start with the basics. What is sort of the age range or the years of birth? What does Generation Z span in terms of ages right now?
The age range that we look at is typically young people born between 1995 and 2010. And you'll see some other sources that'll say 96, 97. We really land on 1995 because it really nicely pairs with the two other generations that came before Generation Z, which were about 14, 15 years. 95 was just a really important year. And a lot of people didn't realize, like, there's a lot of really fun stuff happening. But the big thing is like, this is when we see the internet be commercialized. And so the world that Generation Z grew up in is like, truly, that is an amazing line in the sand that we can draw and say, this generation is vastly, vastly different. So we say 95 to 2010, and that gives us really, I did the math. I try to do the math, but then Gen Z gets older and then I got to do the math again every year. So right now we're looking at 26-year-olds who'll be turning 27, all the way as our youngest are like 10 turning 11. So we're looking at the tweens, teens, and the young adults right now.
Yeah. You already mentioned, if I hear you, Megan, that the internet is one of the main factors that perhaps has influenced who they are culturally. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. I mean, when we look at generations, we can actually take like the technological, what we would call technological context, and how that shapes all generations. So we can trace it all the way back, like Corey mentioned in our last book, we can trace that all the way back to the 1900s. Like, what technology were they using? All of our lives have been enhanced by the internet in some way. Like, we can't deny that. But to be a young person, that be the only way that you know how internet or like information connection and all of that is transmitted is really, really defining a defining context of this generation. But we always say it's a big one, but it's not the only one. There's so many other elements of a defining a generation that we look at. We look at what's going on politically. We look at what's going on economically and what are the main social issues. And we love that kind of four-part framework because it allows us to break that down really nicely and think about what does that look like for millennials when they were in their formative years, Gen X, baby boomers, silent gen, as far back as we can go, really. Technology is big, but it's not the only thing. That's like our big caveat that we put out there.
Could we look at economics, social, and political a little bit? What are some of the sub elements of those that have shaped why Gen Z is Gen Z, or that they are who they are? What can our listeners think about in trying to get a sense of what has shaped that generation?
I'll jump in. The good thing about working with Megan for so many years is that we share a brain in so many ways. So, you know, we definitely have our nuances of what we talk about, but we have a lot of great common content here, you know, and that one of the things as we talk about these different contexts of Gen Z, and again, really, as Megan was saying, you know, to look at a generation without looking at the context is you know, it's difficult. It's right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So we have to kind of understand what's going on around the time that they're born, which might be impacting their parents' generation as they're thinking about, you know, having children. And then, you know, kind of that upbringing and what happens between ages of 14 and 24 are just so profound, you know. And so if you look back at especially the earlier, the older ones of Gen Z, you know, they're considered the recession babies. You know, they were kids when the recession was happening. I have a 12-year-old daughter. She was born in 09, right after the recession. And while she, you know, she didn't necessarily know what that meant when she was born, she's still feeling the residual effects that older adults are like, you know, hey, we got to put that money away for a rainy day, or we could lose our jobs, or we got to worry about foreclosures, things that conversations that may not have happened 10 years before that. And so it's definitely shaped the way that Gen Zers see money, you know, in some ways, not just the idea that they want financial stability. What are they willing to do to get financial stability? But where are they willing to spend their money? And, you know, working in higher education, we're seeing it's very hard to make a value added argument for higher education's worth when you're charging as much as you are. And Gen Z says, I don't know if I want that kind of debt. I don't know if it's worth it. And so, we're, you know, in some ways, the rest of society is functioning as if it were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, with a population that has a completely different mindset. You know, in this sense, particularly around the economy, you look at a kid who's 10 years old and you look at someone who's 26, and they actually share a lot of the same ideas when it comes to, you know, saving money, not spending it, being frugal, you know, really thinking about, you know, kind of downsizing, wanting a job that pays well, but not necessarily, you know, sacrificing their entire happiness for it, but at the same time, searching for something that creates stability. This is something that cuts across the entire generation. So it's really kind of an interesting phenomenon as we look at how context doesn't just shape the environment that Gen Z is growing up in, it shapes the mentality that they carry with them. I mean, there's even studies that have been done on the GI generation 60 years after the Depression, that these you know, individuals in this generation are still exhibiting behaviors as if they were in the Depression. So remembering what happens when kids are young and they're growing up, they carry that mentality with them, even when the environmental context changes.
Yeah, so we've talked about that. Certainly, the internet has shaped them as one element of technology, that economics has shaped them. What would be one or two others of the big factors for people who want to understand Generation Z?
So I think it's we could take social really easily, because it's hard to talk about politics without understanding social and the things that they do care about. So as much as we don't want to pull identity into politics, it's impossible to pull those apart at the same time. So I think when we think about the social context, the world that we're growing, like that we're seeing evolving, is incredibly more conscious of identities. And that honestly has a lot to do with younger generations putting at the forefront the importance of inclusion and acceptance, and just realizing like difference isn't a bad thing and diversity is actually a thing that strengthens us. It, not only just acceptance of others with different identities, the idea of expression in the form of authenticity and how it's okay to be you. And like, that's really like every time I talk with a member of Generation Z, especially anything about expression, authenticity and identity is something that comes up, and finding a way to help other people especially find that. I think some of the other social issues they care about, maybe a little bit beyond just their own identities and the identities of others, would be they're huge advocates for the environment. Another one that's very US specific is they're big advocates around gun control, gun reform, and just general public safety. And so those are the three that we keep coming up, and we saw those come up in our politics study we did in 2019. And those are the issues that they were saying we think politicians need to be paying attention to.
And you know what, I want to piggyback on that, because I think, you know, Megan's point is really, really strong. And this idea of these three issues, one of the things that keeps coming up in our studies too, is that some of the reasons that they have these issues and they're frustrated about these issues is because in some ways they feel like adults have let them down, particularly people in decision-making roles that have not stepped up. I mean, it's, you know, you look at the Parkland shooting that happened, and you know, a number of them went up to the state capitol and tried to lobby for gun laws, and nothing happened. And they just feel let down, like they're not being heard. The climate change is a huge one. You know, in one of our studies, some of our respondents had some pretty choice words for adults and said, "We get it if you didn't know you were harming the planet, but now you know that what you're doing is actively harming the planet, and you're still doing it to make money, and you're leaving us to carry the weight of that." And you know, and then you look at things like social justice, and it's like, you know, that there's large percentages of them that are concerned about human rights and social justice. And again, feeling like the adults that are making these decisions are just making it too difficult. They're like, why are we creating all these, you know, bathroom laws about who can go to the bathroom in different places that is oppressive to trans kids? You know, they're like, just stop it. We've got bigger issues to fight about, and to fight not each other, but fight for, right? And so it's interesting, because the common thread behind these issues is that I'm sad that adults haven't tried to deal with these things. And now here we are, young people, and these are going to be our issues that we're going to have to deal with.
Generation Z, while they sometimes do have criticisms of older generations, they are very smart and savvy in understanding that they can identify where power of age and privilege of age comes. And so I think that they're pretty good at actually navigating that and figuring out ways to find a way for their voice to be heard, and finding ways to advocate. And I think we see that with young people doing that for issues they care about. Like when we look at the March for Our Lives and the students that organized that and their ability, it's not every day that a group of students is able to advocate for something such as gun reform to the level that they did. And I think it's because they know how to organize and make their voice be heard. And that's something that is very, very, I think, unique about them, is they have a new form of grassroots organizing, and they just do it in digital spaces.
So that tells us a lot about how they view the next generation above them, and how that they perceive that generation, if I'm hearing you, hasn't stepped up on some of these important issues. Do we know anything about how the older generations view them on average?
I will advocate on behalf of millennials. I think we actually get along pretty well. We don't fall that far off in some of our viewpoints. And again, I don't want to speak for all the millennials, but there's a lot that we do align with. There's obviously a few differences in the ways that we go about things. But from a social perspective, I think that Generation Z are refreshed by some of what would be more millennial age group people as they're moving into politics. So really common one that a lot of Gen Z look up to are the really young senators and House representatives like AOC and John Ossoff, who are young and are listening to people. And that's because millennials weren't listened to. I don't know if we just weren't as active. I do think that millennials were less informed at the same age as Generation Z was about some of these issues, but we're trying to catch up with them. And do what we can, because what we have as a privilege of being millennials is that we are of the constitutional age to be elected. And so that's something that most of Generation Z right now doesn't have. There's only like, I think, one or two that are in the House of Representatives. That'll probably change as the next like midterms come around, and that changes in terms of them aging into that opportunity. But I think that we have this ability that we kind of hang out in the same general like social media spaces. We kind of get our information from the same place. So I think that there's a little bit of harmony there. I don't think there's as much between Gen X and Gen Z, because they're Gen Z is being raised by Gen X for the most part. And so we see a lot of learning from our parents, but then there's still that generational divide, and they can feel disconnected. I think that the biggest disconnect is probably when we look at Generation Z and baby boomers, just because worlds were so different and the understanding of the world was so different.
You know, we're looking at the baby boomer generation that before the yuppie movement of the 1980s, baby boomers were pretty strong activists. You know, they were the ones marching, you know, anti-war activists, environmental activists, women's rights, civil rights, you name it. So, you know, then they sort of flipped a little bit and became a little bit more conservative as a generation, kind of went through the rest of adulthood. And so, you know, in some ways it's interesting where baby boomers might have a little nostalgia for kind of the fervor of youth and you know, making a difference. But, you know, in some senses now, in many cases, particularly in politics, most of our high-ranking politicians, the ones with the most political capital, are baby boomers. And so that would be relatively threatening. If you're in a situation where you are a lawmaker and you're now setting up the structure of society, you've paid your dues and you've worked your way to that, and now you have, you know, some young kids trying to overturn things. But if you track this stuff back, you know, you look at some of the Greek philosophers who had some interesting quotes, really much like this, like the naivete of children today. You know, this is nothing new. I mean, when baby boomers were activists in the 60s and the 70s, you know, their parents, the GI generation, they were saying, oh, kids today. So this is just a recycled argument that continues to happen. But the whole point being is that there's a lot of things that people do in their youth that are very similar from youth to youth to youth. And so baby boomers might be, you know, for those that are, you know, criticizing or critiquing or, you know, somehow looking down upon this activism of Gen Z, it is very short to forget that that was their generation when they were young too. So it is really kind of an interesting phenomenon as you watch these cycles continue to happen.
And that's something that I always think about, of like, how do we break that cycle? If like we still having these issues, how do we break that cycle? And that's where Generation Z, I think, is they're challenging us in new ways, and they're weaving together different. I think they're creating all these unique hybrid opportunities to address social issues, and they're coming at it from a lot of different ways. And so I always like, that's the thing. If there's a question that keeps me up at night, is like, how do we allow a generation such as Generation Z at the time in their lives when they arguably have the most energy, the most passion, to not burn out in terms of activism and creating a better world? Because as Corey pointed out, the baby boomers were doing that at some point as well. And so at what point where did they hit kind of their stamina stop of fighting for the things that they care about? Because we're still fighting for some things that the baby boomers were caring about in the 60s. Like, those things are still present. So at what point do older generations shed their what would be considered youthful activism identity and move into this space of, like, I don't want to say complacency, that's not it at all. But where do we lose our fervor for that? And how do we actually remove that barrier? And I think about a lot of it is a bureaucracy of society. Like, we wear people down So I think about that all the time. I don't have an answer. It's just a pondering I throw into conversation. But I think about what are the ways that older generations can reflect on that and say, what can I do to open up pathways and opportunities for the young people that are incredibly informed, have the passion, have the energy, and have good solutions? How do I put them in a position to play and really coach and mentor them? Those are the things that are swirling around in my brain when I've got time to lay down and think about it.
And sometimes it just needs to be a conversation where people can come together and say, let's talk about the progress that's been made. Now let's talk about the progress that needs to be made without either generation, you know, feeling threatened by that, you know, where it's like, we need to work together. Megan said it too, is this idea of just, we need to open up opportunities so that instead of older people sort of holding on to the way of the world, the change that they made, right? I mean, we're at a point where many of them have made the change that they wanted to make. And they're sitting and holding it very tightly instead of saying, okay, I'm done. This is it. We're at the end, is saying we've got more to do. And hey, we've got a whole group of people that want to do this. Let me help empower them, not get in their way, not make it difficult for them, not condemn them or chastise them or, you know, say snarky things on social media, which we see happen for young people. No, it's supporting them, opening up the pathway, because I'll tell you, they got a whole lot more energy than I do to go do these things. And frankly, we could all benefit from things like, I don't know, maybe fresh air, clean water. And if they have the energy to go do that, I'm going to try to find everything in my power I can do as someone in an older generation to help pave the pathway, open up the networks, create the opportunities for them to take that energy and make the world a better place for all of us. And I think that that's a mentality that is not necessarily in the majority. It's certainly only with, you know, I only see it with a handful of people where they say young people can leverage change that we need, and that is good.
Well, part of the mission of the Learning Vibes podcast is looking at lifelong learning and getting the best out of everyone. So given what we know about Generation Z, how do we commune with them to get the best out of them?
You know the old golden rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, that doesn't really work when it comes to generational interactions. You want to do unto others as they want to be done unto. And so I think about that, particularly when we talk about parenting. I'm a parent of a Gen Z, or I'm a faculty member of a Gen Z students. You know, and it's the same principle that goes across. It's, you know, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. If you think about, if you know your context, you know your audience, and you teach them, you parent them, you guide them, you coach them, you supervise them in a way that they will excel the most, then do that.
I think like a quick one, something that if you're someone's, their boss, I'm Gen Z's aunt, like that kind of age. And so for me, it's a matter of building a relationship and fostering a relationship. And it's not groundbreaking, but what it does is it allows an open and honest conversation to actually take place. And that if you're teaching them or supervising them, allowing them to understand who they are allows them to also talk more about communication preference. If you're listening from the workplace, you know that breakdown of communication is the number one thing that's going to unravel a team. So if we have multiple members of teams from different generations, and we all communicate differently, we're all talking into different corners and nothing is getting said to each other. It's a matter of building that team to be able to say, I actually prefer if you connect with me via text message, or let's all agree that we're going to focus on using the project management app to do this. Because if we have that relationship, talking about preferences in an open and honest sense doesn't feel weird or authoritative. And that's the big thing, is we're building trust as we build relationships, and honestly, more things flourish.
On the next episode of the Learning Vibes podcast, more with Dr. Corey C. Miller and Dr. Megan Grace. The Learning Vibes podcast is self-produced by Drs. David Knowlton and Annie Ranking. Theme music, copyright 2019, Dave S. Knowlton.